The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Newly rebranded Fire Breslow Podcast, presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I've got Chris and Doug alongside. And fellas, Red Sox won a game, amazingly. And they won it with a lot of offense. 8-1, your final score tonight. Peyton Tolley cruises through six innings, gives up no runs. And Ryan Watson gets his first career save. Of all the things that you might have had on your bingo card for this game tonight, I don't think that was one of them. So Red Sox do win 8-1. Offense shows up finally, and they win a big game. So, Chris, I'll start with you. What did you see in the offense tonight?
I saw patience, for one thing. A ton of hits. I mean, I think this is the first time in a long time. I mean, the team as a whole had 15 hits, and every single player got at least one hit. I can't remember the last time that you didn't have at least one over with a million strikeouts in a game. So it was somewhat refreshing, but it's odd. I mean, I don't want to root against my team. So it's not about rooting against my team, but it's tough because I just know that the longer that we kind of flounder and waffle around, like where we have these nights where we kind of explode on offense, and then you have these offers, it's like you're just treading 500. And at that point, you do that for too long. Like, yeah, Breslow's going to get fired, but like he needs to get fired now, especially with some of the reports that are coming out where it's like it looks like we might be trying to pull the trigger on a trade. And it's like I don't want a guy that's a dead man walking, inevitably gone, making that move and God forbid setting us back even more years coming out of a potential lockout next year. So, yeah, like it was nice to see, but it's not sustainable. And at this point, I want to rip the Band-Aid off, and I just know them not doing this is going to bring us closer. It's almost like when your football team and it's like you're out of the playoffs, like lose every game. Like I want the first pick.
Yeah, definitely. I know what you mean. And it's not that I still don't like to see them lose. You know, when they lose a bad game, I'm still, you know, upset about it. But when they win, it just feels useless, right? It just feels like, all right, yeah, you won 8-1. This team sucks. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you're not going to go anywhere. You're never going to do anything in the playoffs. You're never going to make the playoffs. So it's just, I mean, I'm not really a big, like, MLB draft guy. So, like, you know what I mean? I've never really thought about, like, tanking for the first pick in the MLB draft.
No, me but, either. I was you just know trying what I mean? To use the analogy.
No, no, you're right. Because like, it's not about, you know, us wanting to lose isn't about getting a draft pick. It's about getting Breslow fired, right? That's why we want to see the team lose right now. And you know, I don't ever want to see them lose. When I'm watching the game, I want to see them do good. I'm rooting for them to win. You know, but we don't want them to. We want them to look bad because we want Breslow gone. And, you know, I mean, Cora got fired off of a 19-run game. Devers got traded after a sweep of the Yankees. So maybe we can be winning and he'll still get fired. I don't know. You know, anything can happen with this organization. But, yeah, it's not about, you know, getting a good draft pick really, because I don't pay attention to that. But if losing is going to make Breslow out the door faster, then that's what I'd want.
The win is always nice, especially against a division rival. You know, you're trying to climb your way out of the bottom of the standings a little bit. So, it still feels good to win 8-1. And if anything, if you want to look at the offense and say, well, it's still pretty broken, but you can highlight a few individual things like Willy Abreu finally hit a home run tonight. I mean, I mentioned on the show last night, he hadn't hit one since May 8th. So that was good to see. Caleb Durbin has now, what, six games in a row with an extra base hit? So whether or not, if you want to buy stock in that, go ahead. I still think it's a bit of a fluke. I know the Driveline guys are patting themselves on the back for that one because they sent out a tweet a couple of days ago that Durbin went back to their lab to work on his swing, and now he's been hitting better. I still don't know if I buy into it long term. You know, Mickey Gasper with the most fake triple you're ever going to see because center fielder just pulled a Raimel Tapia kind of thing, right? That happened to Jaron Duran a couple of years ago. So it's nice to see. But yeah, at the end of the day, Mickey Gasper is not going to be hitting two-run triples for you and winning a wild card game. That's just not a realistic expectation. I don't think this stretch that Caleb Durbin is going on is going to turn him into what he was with Milwaukee last year. I think he's just kind of finally hitting a little bit better than he was, which was not at all. So, I mean, the bar was in hell for Caleb Durbin. So congrats on raising the bar a little bit. Now he's just in the Earth's core, but, you know, he's still not someone that I'm going to invest in long term. If you want to look at Abreu hitting, you know, finally hitting a home run and driving in some runs, you know, looking better against right-handed pitching, I think that's something that you can, you know, tip your cap to and bank on. I think his ceiling is still pretty high. But you guys are right. At the end of the day, it's just winning like this, it just kind of prolongs the inevitable. And especially with the reports coming out, as you mentioned, Chris, about Red Sox are aggressively pursuing a right-handed bat and are willing to take on a bad contract to do it. I mean, in like the Dombrowski days, I would have said, yeah, sure, fine. Because I would trust Dombrowski to go get the right guy. With Breslow still in that seat, those kind of reports scare the crap out of me. Because who the hell are you targeting? And like, what kind of conversations are you having with these other executives? So look, tomorrow you would look at it as like kind of a sweet spot. You guys mentioned if you're going to fire Breslow, you get an afternoon game. It's a getaway game. You're heading on the road after this. You know, maybe you take two out of three from Baltimore and you say, you know what? Yeah, how about you don't get on the plane, Craig? Why don't you just go home? We're going to get on the plane. We're going to go, you know, to our road series. You stay here. Like, that's what I would like to see happen, but I don't know if they're there yet. And every win, I mentioned it last night, American League's still a jumbled mess. Red Sox are still only a couple games out of a wild card spot. So every win brings them closer to being playoff contenders, in which case, you know, Breslow's going to say, well, I want to save my job and my reputation, so I'm going to make a bold move here. It's just, that scares the crap out of me. So nice win, but the sort of bigger picture thing about that is a little bit scary.
Well, because to your point, like with the Dave Dombrowski hour, if he would have done that, he would have had the rest of the team built around whatever player he's trying to bring on. And if it's a bad contract, like you could eat it because you still have a quote unquote good team around this player you're bringing in. We bring on a bad contract with this team, like it could set us back a half decade because we don't have foundational pieces. The majority of our foundation is our pitching. It's not the hitters on this team. And like for all that we thought, these cornerstone players, right? Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, Campbell, Teal got traded. Like out of all of them, none of them might be cornerstone players. Not what we imagined. And that's sad to say at this point. And, you know, I think it's almost unanimous at this point that everyone wants Breslow fired. So, like, again, it's tough because I wake up every morning and I'm like, man, I don't want my team to lose. I don't want to root against the Red Sox, especially living in New York. I got to see the Yankees and they're winning. It's like, I don't want the Red Sox to lose. But I know the longer that he's around, the more we're going to be stuck in this purgatory of baseball hell. And I just want to get out of it at this point. And, you know, then you see things like there was a tweet today where basically it highlighted Chris Sale, Kyle Harrison, Quinn Priester, and forgive me, I'm probably forgetting somebody else, Pivetta. All these pitchers that got traded from the Red Sox that went on to be like top five Cy Young, you know, votes. And
Pivetta gets slept on. He's been really good since we got rid of him.
His problem is he gets injured, but
he's good. Yeah, he's good.
Breslow's supposed to be a pitching guru. Like this was supposed to be the strength of Craig Breslow. And he trades away these assets and we literally have nothing to show for it. And it's when I see things like that, I'm like, no, I want them to lose because I want this asshole out.
Yeah, definitely. And Jason, like what you were saying, I looked at the wild card standings and I literally stared at it for 5 minutes thinking I was reading it wrong. I was like, there's no way this says we're 3 games out. Like, that can't be right. And I was staring and staring, and I was like, I guess that's right. And that feels crazy. That feels crazy. But, you know, I mean, we're dead last in our division, and then you look and we're only 3 games out of a wild card. But it's just there's no light at the end of the tunnel for this team. Like, no matter what move you make, the only light is to fight Breslow. It's, I mean, the whole fan base wants it, like, unanimously across the board. I would imagine the players want it. I would imagine Theo wants it. Who knows what John Henry wants? That's, I'm not going to speculate on that, but
even the Bluminati want it.
Yeah, for sure. It's just, there's no Breslow guys out there. It's just, you're not going to find them. So it's, you know, the sooner the better. You know, we're delaying the inevitable, all that. It's just, it will be a happy day. And, you know, I think, you know, this team a lot, it showed tonight, they really thrive off of each other. You know, one guy gets a hit, they kind of, you know, we've had some big run games this year, and I think they do kind of feel that, you know, that chain reaction, the vibes are high, and they go out there and hit. I don't know how tapped in they really feel with Breslow or how much they even really care, but I would think that would bring the vibes up a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, there's a lot of smoke online about people criticizing Breslow. The latest one was, I guess, Hunter Dobbins' father went on a Twitter rant today about Breslow and basically said, like,
oh, really? I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what his Twitter account was. Someone brought it up, but he's basically saying that the pitchers and, like, you know, Andrew Bailey and the pitching staff, they don't even get to make game time decisions. It's always these just guys behind laptops. And he, you know, he didn't elaborate on it, but he's like, the whole thing is just one big computer. Even Andrew Bailey, you know, he can implement his stuff a little bit, but ultimately it's Breslow and his robots that take over.
Yeah.
And like, you
remember,
hear
Sean Newcomb?
Sean Newcomb. Yeah,
he's from Randolph. And I know, you know, people that know that were close to him. And the quote that they gave me from him was, a bunch of nerds telling pro athletes what to do.
Yep. And it, you hear, you know, stuff like that. You hear Catherine Baratek, you know, mocking him for being the smartest guy in baseball after Jason Baratek got fired. There's just so much. And you got to wonder, like, if that's what Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was referring to when he made those comments after last night's game, saying, you know, the reason we struggle at home is because there's so many distractions around here. And I have to imagine that's true. When they're on the road, sure, I you know, Breslow travels with the team, but the guy's such a, you know, antisocial nut that he probably just locks himself in his hotel room, doesn't talk to anybody, you know, goes to the ballpark to watch the game. But yeah, doesn't do anything else. And he's just on his cell phone doing God knows what or on his laptop. But when they're here at Fenway and they're back home and, you know, they're meeting up with their families again, they're meeting up with friends and they're saying, yeah, you guys been hearing what's going on? Like, if you listen to the radio today, if you read the Globe today, like, this guy's getting shredded. Like, even, you know, John Henry's got David Ortiz talking for him now. I mean, so I got to imagine that's what he's talking about. And say what you want about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, but since he's been in the big leagues, he's pretty much been on good winning teams, right? He broke in with Texas. There were a lot of good teams there. He went to the playoffs several years with Texas. Went to the playoffs with the Yankees the 2 years he was there. You know, the Pittsburgh year, okay, that wasn't great. But, and then just as recently as last year, he was on that World Series Blue Jays team. So that guy knows what a winning environment and what a winning locker room and clubhouse looks and feels like. And he felt the need after last night's loss as a fringe utility guy who's been here for 5 minutes to basically come out and say, yeah, like, you guys are asking why we suck so much at home. It's because home is kind of a circus. This whole thing is a circus. Everything that happens at Fenway, everything that happens with Fenway Sports Group, and everything that happens with this front office is a clown show. And we hear it when we turn on the radio. We read it when we, you know, go online or when we pick up the newspaper. Like, it's everywhere. Because again, it's Boston. You can't escape it. So at what point, you know, if you're John Henry, do you just say enough's enough? Like, or, you know, someone, Theo, Henry, whoever wants to, you know, jump in and say it's finally time to pull the plug. I think you're there. Because as you mentioned, Doug, like when these guys are playing well and they're into it and they're, you know, they do rally off each other. I believe IKF when he says that they have a tight-knit locker room. I think they do. And I think part of the reason they're tight-knit is because you've got a little bit of a major league, you know, the movie situation going on where they're all rallying against Breslow and this front office. And what sucks is, as Chris mentioned, like by winning, they're kind of doing the opposite. They're kind of keeping his job a little bit safer. But I do. I think that they can't stand the guy. And I think that they are praying that he gets blown out of here sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad. It's a bad state of affairs here for the Boston Red Sox when it comes to the situation. Breslow, I mean, listen, it's Pride Month and there's no Bresbians left. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, no, it's past due, overdue.
Yeah, and especially with this fan base, I mean, even after the horrible winter he had, we still had people online saying, oh, just be patient. Breslow's still really good. He's going to get there. I mean, those people have even turned on him. So it's time. I don't know if it's going to happen tomorrow. I just look at that kind of spot in the calendar, like day game before a road trip. Like, that's the sweet spot, right? Thursday, it's the end of the week, you know, so it's not going to get a ton of media coverage. Like, that's the sweet spot where you fire a guy. And I, you know, hopefully it will happen, but I doubt it will. As you guys mentioned, though, the pitching program is one of his only few successes here. And that bared fruit again tonight with Peyton Tolley, just completely in command for most of this game. Only went six innings, but obviously with the big lead, Red Sox want to save his arm a little bit. Velocity was down a little bit in the first inning. That was a bit of a concern, but he eventually figured it out. Again, pitch six scoreless. Chris, how'd you feel about Peyton Tolley tonight?
I was mixed on him because, you know what, I've been too high on him as of late, and because it's just the inconsistencies, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that I think he goes out there and just tries to be a flamethrower, especially when the offense isn't doing much, and he's a very emotional guy, and he really tries to rally with that energy. I mean, listen, he pitched well, don't get me wrong. I think it's the efficiency that somewhat concerns me. Like, if he only went six innings and you tell me he comes out at like 78, 85 pitches and we take him out after six because we're up 8-0, totally fine with that. He went 99 pitches, so almost 100 in six innings. And I think that's where I get a little like, ugh. He almost only also had five strikeouts. But again, he didn't look bad. You know, Baltimore's offense is somewhat above average, nothing super special, but, you know, they've got danger in that lineup. But I guess it's a step in the right direction. This is kind of the start that I expected from early yesterday. So it's funny. I had us winning yesterday, losing today, thinking there would be some like inconsistency with Tolley. We got the exact opposite, but nonetheless, we are right back to where I thought we would be. Rubber match tomorrow. And it's interesting. Like, I could go either way where we lose and maybe that's what catapults us to fire Breslow, or to your guys' point, there's been a lot of firing off of wins and off of these weird moments where it doesn't seem appropriate. And I actually think if we were to win the series tomorrow, it would be even quieter and no one would expect it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, anything is possible with this team at this point. Any firing, any trade, nothing would surprise me. Even if a big trade happens that we don't think Breslow is capable of making, if it did happen, I think we would all just say it was probably Theo. You know, Breslow probably didn't even do it. But, I mean, the offense looked really good tonight. Like, you know, that ton of hits, you know, everyone getting a hit, everyone getting involved. And it helped totally. You know, you could tell when Abreu hit that home run, it almost felt like that's enough for Tolley. You know, and Tolley, you know, he didn't have a high K night, you know, but he gets a lot of flyouts, you know, because guys are really, you know, behind his fastball, and he gets a lot of flyouts on that. And the velocity was down a little bit, but I think it shows it shows a lot that he can, you know, he still doesn't have that off-speed pitch that we need him to get, but even if he didn't have his full velocity tonight, he still found a way to get around guys, you know, and get the outs he needed to get. And, you know, zero runs is zero runs. And you're right, the pitch count's definitely high, and you definitely want him to be more efficient than that. Hopefully, you know, as he gets older, he will be. And, you know, if he really – if he can get that second, you know, I feel like he just – this guy would just kill with a slider. If he could just get, you know, a really good slider, it would – I think it would really put him in, like, upper levels of pitching in the league.
Yeah, it's hard to be fastball sinker as a starter and have that really be your only repertoire. And I know occasionally he'll mix in a changeup. Occasionally, very occasionally, he'll mix in a curveball. I agree with you, Doug. I think like a killer slider would be exactly what he needs, just that he can bury inside to right-handers, get lefties to chase, that kind of thing. But that's hard to develop, right? And so this is where I kind of wonder, Terry mentioned this on last night's show, that if Bayo continues to kill it as the bulk guy and you get Crochet back, do you send Tolley down at that point to really just kind of refine his stuff and get that third pitch? You know, again, this year, you're not a World Series team, right? You're not a World Series team, not likely an ALCS or even ALDS kind of team. So would it be more beneficial for the team and for Peyton Tolley in the long term for them to send him down after everyone's healthy just to get that third pitch going?
You know, I've considered that. First of all, I think it's very hard to expect Bayo to have any sort of level of consistency to where I would be comfortable sending anyone down. Like, to me, I'm on the bandwagon of like, ship Bayo out if you can, if you could find someone dumb enough to take him. Because I mean, in all reality, he is on a very reasonable deal for a team that's looking for like a number three starter to solidify their rotation and think they could fix him. And if you could find that partner, take it. The thing I think it gets to a point, though, with the up and down between Early and Tolley, up and down in the minors, major league, up. It's like, let them stay somewhere and develop. And I think we've done the up and down too much already to this point in between two seasons. To me, I'd rather see him try to figure it out here, because the truth is, even if he were to develop a pitch at the AAA level, like, as good as AAA is, as we've seen, we've had many guys tear it up in AAA. They come to the majors for the Red Sox and absolutely stink it up and suck. Like, figure it out here. And like, this is the perfect time to figure it out. There's no pressure. There's no expectation to go to the playoffs. Like, it would have been terrible to do this last year. You're in the middle of a wild card race, potentially a division race up to a certain point. Expectations are low. Like, figure it out here at the major league level, because there's still so many teams that we're going to face and play that like aren't going to be fighting for anything, are very low level, low caliber American League teams that realistically are in a wild card race, but in any other year, or if they're in the NL, have absolutely no shot. Like, figure it out.
I totally agree. Leave him here. Have him, you know, if he needs to figure out pitches, just do it here. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Like, you know, what's going to happen to this team if you just have him work on stuff in the big leagues instead of, I mean, he gets a loss, you know, the team stays in last place. I would rather probably just move Bayo to the pen, you know, and make him a long relief guy. If someone needs a day off, you know, Bayo can start. I'd rather just see him, you know, even if it was like, we're working on, you know, he's working his slider. I'd be fine with him giving up a couple jacks and being like, whatever. You know, he's doing this at what, 20, 21, you know, so he can be great at 26. I'm fine with that. You know, this is a season where we can kind of afford that. We can kind of afford, you know, a young stud prospect, you know, learn things at the pro level, right? Like Chris said, it's just, you can do all you want against AAA. You know what I mean? That doesn't always translate. And he's been pitching enough now against big league hitting that I don't think sending him down is going to do him any good. I just let him stay up here. Let him get his growing pains here. If he gets jacked up a couple games, he gets jacked up a couple games, and we're right where we are now. But we're, you know, progressing him at a faster rate in the big leagues than he would be in AAA.
Yeah, I think I agree. It's not worth it at this point. You know he can pitch at the big league level. So sending him down to AAA, I get it. You want him to develop further. You want him to develop that next pitch, maybe even two more if he can, just to expand his arsenal. But what's the point? He's already proven himself at the AAA level. And at this point with Bayo, I'd rather either just, like you said, repackage him as a reliever or see if there's still some trade value there. I mean, Bayo's still under 27 years old. So there are teams out there that will look at him, and as Chris mentioned, he's got a pretty reasonable contract. They would look at him and go, you know what? We can work with that. Like, we're willing to take him on. We think we can fix him. We can make him like a, you know, at least a high-end number three kind of starter. There are a lot of National League teams, I think, that would be very interested in Brian Bayo, especially some of the ones with bigger ballparks, right? I think that would be something that would suit him. So I'd almost rather they do that and keep Toley and Early exactly where they are, because those guys are only going to get better if they keep pitching at the major league level. Yep, there's going to be a rough start every now and then, but that's growing pains. That's okay. And part of the double-edged sword of what this season is that, you know, we are at a point where I think mentally and emotionally, I don't want to speak for everyone on the show, but I think we're at a point where we're okay with this being a development season for the young guys on this team. And, you know, for some of the guys down in Worcester, down in AA, you know, let's see how Franklin Arias can do the rest of the year, that kind of thing. Because realistically, his team's not, you know, they're not making it all the way, right? They'll probably be at best a second or third wild card. And I doubt they'd even get beyond the wild card round at this point. So I think we are at a point where we're okay with this being a development season, but as we mentioned, the American League is just still so wide open that it's hard. You win games like this and the pressure is going to start to crank up a little bit because, you know, now you're what, 2.5 games out of a wild card, something like that. What if you win 3 out of 4 and all of a sudden you're there, you have a wild card spot and you are a playoff team? Well, then it's, you know, then there's a whole new conversation about if Peyton Toley goes out there and gets lit up trying to experiment a new pitch, then the pressure is going to be on the team to go, well, he might have to be sent down or we might have to skip a start. It just sucks. Like if they were in the National League, this would not be an issue because we could say, okay, they're pretty much out of it. Let's make it a development year and let's do exactly what you said. Keep Toley up here. Let him develop, you know, his next set of pitches up here. But being in the American League, they're just not afforded that opportunity to do that. And this is why, you know, it's frustrating. And I'm sure it's frustrating for, you know, people listening, and it is for us as well. Like, this is why the Breslow thing is such a dark cloud that hangs over this organization, because he's going to want to buy to save his ass. And I don't think that's the right thing to do. So they're just, it's such a tightrope act that they have to walk right now, because every win pushes them closer to something that we don't want them to do, which sounds crazy as a Red Sox fan to say, don't win, we don't want that. But it's just, it's hard because I'd rather that they almost admit, even if we win a couple games, we're out of it. So we're going to focus on development this year. I just think that's long-term, that's better off for this team right now than trying to buy some high-priced contract to come in here and what? Win you a few more games to get the third wild card spot so you can get swept by the Rays? Like, I don't see the point in that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And honestly, the more I think about the Bayo situation, what would honestly be ideal is if we can kind of get some resolution and closure on the potential lockout situation. Because if we find out there's more than likely going to be a lockout, a salary cap, and have a good, clear understanding of what those parameters look like, and then have an understanding of, okay, the like teams like the Dodgers, like are all those contracts grandfathered in? Because there's a good chance they might not be, and they have a certain amount of time to get off of some of those contracts. And where a guy like Bayo's value could skyrocket is if we have those things before the trade deadline or like going into the offseason while things are still quote-unquote active before a lockout, I could see a team like the Dodgers trading for him. Because you know what? Like, yeah, we always wanted him to be the future number one or two. Realistically, he's more like a 3 or 4. But if you're the Dodgers and you have all this, you basically almost $1 billion between Yamamoto, Sasaki, and then Blake Snell. They all can't get paid that under a salary cap. you're going to have to probably move off one of them, more than likely Sasaki or Snell, because those contracts are pretty bloated. You could take on a guy like Bayo to be the three and take their spot at a fraction of the cost. So now I'm not saying you're getting one of them back, but that's where you could really come in, like, hey, maybe we get some of the prospects back that we would want, maybe even ones that we've sent over there, preferably Tibbs. But I mean, that's where I could really see if there was clarity around that scenario, Brian Bayo's value could shoot up pretty quickly for a team like the Dodgers or someone who's got bloated contracts they're going to have to move off of.
Yeah, it's interesting. Stuff is something to think about. I like that.
Yeah, the lockout does throw a whole new element into this too, right? Because if there is going to be one, which I'm so pessimistic, I think there absolutely is going to be a lockout. I think the early negotiations are already not going well at all. So I think we're headed that way. And that just makes it even more frustrating because, okay, yeah, you can have a development year this year, but you're probably not playing baseball next year. So now that's 2 years that you're going to throw away because you didn't hire the right guy. And, you know, you just, once again, you bring in the wrong guy to try and run this team. It's just, it's frustrating because it shouldn't be that way, right? We should be contending every year and shouldn't even be talking about having a development year. But that's where we are. So, and yeah, that lockout, I don't know how you guys feel, but I am not, I'm getting more and more pessimistic by the day that that's where we're headed.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
That's where I think the sooner we get to the point of inevitability of there being a lockout and having some of the parameters of what that's going to look like coming out, I think could help a team like the Red Sox.
Absolutely. Well, lockout thing is, that's a topic that's going to be discussed as we get further into the season, probably more like August, September, when we realize we're actually out of it. And then we can really start to be doom and gloom about having no baseball next year. But we'll table that for now. For now, we'll just focus on what's in front of us. We got an afternoon game tomorrow. So it's a 1:35 start, and it is confirmed now. Brian Bayo is starting. There will not be an opener. He is going to start in the first inning tomorrow. So, Chris, start with you. How do you feel about that?
I mean, it's a day game, so I don't feel great about it. I don't know. What scares me more than Bayo or anything else is a guy like Rodgers is the exact type of pitcher that any team whose offense is struggling would salivate to get the opportunity to try and get right. But the Sox have had this scenario and situation all season long where we're like, here's a guy with a near 5 ERA that we should literally tag at least 4 runs on in the first 3 innings. And I could see him going 7 with him giving up either no runs or 1 run. And I know Bayo's not going to do that. So it's almost hard not to imagine a loss at this point. And again, it's not what I want, but it might be for what's best.
Yeah, even with Bayo, pitching really, really well his last time out, it's still, he hasn't been able to get through that first inning. And I just, it's just hard to pick Bayo in a game right now. It's hard to pick the offense going, back-to-back games of big runs. And I'm picking them to lose. I'm going to pick the Orioles to, win the series. I don't know. Bayo might not pitch that bad, but it's hard for me to pick the offense, putting up 2 big games in a row at this point.
So I'm going to go with the ultimate optimism prediction here. I think the Red Sox are going to win tomorrow.
Nice.
And I think Craig Breslow is going to get fired at 4:35.
Oh, hell yeah. Let's go.
I think he's going to be left on the tarmac.
Hell yeah.
And that's going to be that. The only reason I say they're going to win, Trevor Rogers has been not just bad, he's been abysmal this season. He's got an ERA of 6.8, whip of 1.5. Like, he's getting tuned up. And I don't trust the Red Sox offense either. But look, they went up against Chris Bassitt today, who came in having a bad year, and they got to him. I think they can get to Trevor Rogers tomorrow. And yeah, I just think, you'll probably see a little bit of a different lineup. I don't think you'll see like Yoshida in there. You'll probably see the new kid getting in there. So heard some pretty good things about him. So we'll see. I think he's a switch hitter too, Siegler. So see how he does against the lefty, but I imagine they'll get him in there. But yeah, I'm going to go with the ultimately optimistic prediction. Think Red Sox win. Craig Breslow gets fired an hour later.
Well, I'll tell you what, in all seriousness, I mean, listen, I would love for that to happen. I mean, sign me up. The fans need to stop to sell the team, because John Henry's not going to sell the team. Like, that's not realistic. Yell fire Breslow. Like, to me, there's a lot more power and credence in a realistic, like, get the fans amped up and yelling that every freaking game. And at some point, you might actually get your wish, because he's not selling the team.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, continuing to yell, sell the team. You're just screaming into the void, because you're right, Chris. Yeah. He's not selling. Okay,
he doesn't care.
Yeah, fans been yelling at him to sell for like almost 20 years. He's not going to do it. Okay, so you're right. Instead of chanting that, chant and bring signs that say "Fire Breslow," because hey, that's we're trying to do our part here at the Bastards. We got "Fire Breslow" plastered all over our page, so we're doing our part. We need you guys to do your part as well, and we need the team to do their part. So. Let's hope that we get our way. But either way, we'll be back on the air tomorrow at some point after the game. Obviously, an afternoon game, a little bit trickier with timing. But we will be on the air sometime afterwards to talk to you guys about it. So until then, enjoy.